Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
It's February 17th, 2012. The Augustinian Church in Galway City is packed with more waiting outside. Thousands of people have come to say goodbye to a man who was a footballing icon. When Galway Rovers got themselves into the League of Ireland, he returned from Limerick to play for them. He had played in a league-winning Aston Villa side before returning once again to Galway. He was instrumental in getting the club's only major honour of winning the 1991 FAI Cup in what would turn out to be his last season in top-flight football. The great swan song of a legend. But for all the accolades, for all the plaudits, many that day talked of the man, not the football player. He was Galway's favourite footballing son. He was one of their own. He was Eamon Deasy, and he was, above all else, a good man. Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football with me, Ciarán Kerwin, and our footballing historian, Gary Spain. On this week's show, we are in the 90s. In the League of Ireland, as we see some shock cup victories, crazy finishes in the League of Ireland seasons in that decade. Plus, we were talking about that man at the start of the show, Eamon Deasy, as well as other great players and characters in the decade. Remember to share the show on your own social media channels to spread the word about the history and heritage of Irish football on the island. We're also available across the spectrum of podcast platforms, including Spotify, Apple, Amazon, YouTube, and much more. Now, that said, let's get on with the show. So, Gary, we're making our way through the decades and we're up into the 1990s already in terms of the podcast. Give us a little outline, I suppose, as to what we can look forward to in 1990. What was the League of Ireland like?
Yeah, so I suppose it was... The league title went around the place, I suppose, in the 90s. Hats might say they were the dominant team, I suppose. They bookended the decade with title successes. But Shelburne were certainly very strong at that stage as well. Dundalk, as always, were there. And our old friend Shamrock Rovers even chipped in with a title without actually being that good, really, I would say, for much of the decade. So... it's a bit of a mix and gathering. Derry City obviously had finished the last decade as treble winners, and they were part of the big story as well for the 90s.
Talk to us about 89-90. So let's start off the decade. What are we looking at here in terms of who the movers and shakers are this season?
Well, it was very much a two-horse race. So Derry were the champions. Pats were the ones that pushed them all the way and eventually took their crown in a pretty nail-biting. Pats won it by 3 points in the end. There was nobody else. There were a good 10 points clear at third place Dundalk. It probably came down. Pats were at the time were homeless. They were playing in Harris Cross. Richmond Park was under development. It probably came down to a crucial game, maybe three or four games from the end, when Derry City were the visitors to Harold's Cross and Pats got the draw they needed. It was a great point for Pats. It was a bad point for Derry. It was really felt they needed to win the game. Two famous goal-scoring names in the League of Ireland, Mark Ennis for St. Pats and Liam Coyle for Derry, traded goals. Sadly, although he did make a comeback again, it was meant to be the end of Liam Coyle's career. He had a very bad knee injury and he was probably never the same player after this. But he finished out 89-90 and and I mean, I remember the game because Limerick were the last visitors to the Brandywell on the. And I remember it.
Keeping it. I'm
keeping it local, but I actually think I was the only visiting fan that night. But it's not one to be fondly remembered. It's one I remember as maybe a bit traumatic because, well, the scoreline was 7-0 to Derry City. And it probably wasn't a fair reflection of the way the game was played. And if I'm honest about that, it probably should have been 10. But,
Was it one goal for every hour it took to get to Derry? Was it
probably in those days? You know, Liam Coyle actually scored, if I remember rightly. Felix Healy, I think, got a hat trick. Derry was just rampant, but it wasn't to be because Pats, I think, they'd already won the league at that stage. They'd beaten UCD, I think, 4-0 or something, to clinch the league at Harris Cross, but. They finished 3 points ahead of Derry. Derry did sign off the season on a high note, obviously, with the 7-0 win. But it was pretty disappointing end to the season for Limerick. But it was, I mean, there was a big crowd there, and Liam Coyle, the local boy, his dad, Faye Coyle, was a legend in Derry as well. You know, I mean, it's it was so sad. I mean, he was, what a player he was. And, I mean, he just got a really, really bad knee injury. And he did come back after he was meant to retire, but he did come back again. But I don't think he was ever the same player.
Talk to us a bit about this St. Pat's team, because for a long time, or for a while anyway, they, like all the teams in Dublin, they'd been in the shadow of Shamrock Rovers for a while. And then, you know, that Shamrock Rovers team kind of splits and fades away. And then kind of St. Pat's kind of come in to fill that kind of void. Am I right in saying that they kind of move into that kind of space of winning league titles?
Yeah, so they were certainly very, very strong in the 90s. I mean, look, you're Brian Kerr there, and obviously a legend in Shakur. He built it on a strong defense. I mean, Dave Henderson in goal, of course, who was the famous Henderson family of goalkeepers. Dad Paddy, I think it was Paddy, was a great goalkeeper as well. There's a whole history of Henderson goalkeepers from the north side of Dublin.
Yeah.
Brother Stephen was in goal for Limerick at the time as well. But Dave Henderson was in goal for Pats. I'm going to forget some players, so please forgive me on this. But they had the likes of Curtis Fleming and Pat Kelch as full-backs. Damien Byrne, great player with Drogheda, but he was on that Pats team as well. Very good player, very solid at the back. In midfield, you'd like some Mick Moody and John Trapper Tracy, real quality players. And of course, you had Paul O'Zam, and just that bit of class and absolute class player. And not to mention Mark Ennis, who I said got chipped in with so many goals that season. So, and forgive me who I've forgotten, God Almighty, probably some stars as well. But it was a very strong, excellent Pats team. And actually, I think I just recall when they beat UCD 4-0 to win the league, it was the week before, and Derry had been playing Drogheda, and they were two down, and they came back to draw 2-2, but it effectively handed the title to...
To St. Pat's. Talk to us a bit about Brian Kerr, because, you know, I would know him as Brian Kerr, the TV pundit, but tell us a little bit about him and his managerial style, because I know often when kind of ex-players or whatever they talk about that period or that time, whatever, they do talk fondly of Brian. So what did he give this team, and kind of, I suppose, what was his own kind of background before coming to manager?
Well, so Brian was, I think he's originally from a boxing background, actually. His father was, well, his family is maybe originally from Scotland and then had moved to Belfast. So I'm not quite sure on the background there. But Brian, excellent job as a manager. I mean, he managed Irish underage teams as well and had huge success in the 1990s. But as manager of Pats, and he's an absolute legend down in Chicago, because, I mean, they wouldn't have had a massive budget at the time. As I said, they were playing out of Harold's Cross in Chicago. Richmond Park was closed down at that stage. There wasn't much money, and he put that team together, and what a team it was. And they were good enough to dethrone the treble winners, Derry City, from the previous season. Mm. And Brian, of course, was there as manager for Pats for many years.
Yeah, and I suppose the thing that I find interesting sometimes is, and it kind of crops up when we go down through the decades on this podcast, is sometimes you just need that manager that gives a team that self-belief, that kind of impetus to be something more than perhaps they felt they were. And sometimes that leads to teams, like we've seen before, winning one league title and then they kind of they disappear, or they turn into like this kind of fortress of a team that's really hard to beat, break down, and they win kind of multiples of league titles. But that kind of those kind of managers that kind of crop up, that all of a sudden change the fortunes of a team in a different direction, is always interesting to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, certainly Brian Carr was one of those. I mean, players wanted to play for him, and he got them playing for him. And I think there's no doubt it was, I mean, look, and he's Pats through and through, and he still goes to the matches in Richmond Park, and he's still very, very highly regarded there, you know. And I mean, not just, I know he went on to manage the national team, and maybe that was a different discussion. Mm. But also as manager of the underage, I mean, he won under 16 and under 18 UEFA titles in the 1990s as well, which was an incredible achievement. Obviously brought some quality players through as well with that.
Yeah, didn't he bring an underage team to third place in the World Cup with Damien Duff? Yeah. Was on that team as well?
Yeah, in 1997 in Malaysia, we finished third in the World Cup, and if I remember rightly, lost out to an Argentina team with, who was on that Argentina team? Some quality players. But yeah,
it's and I think that's a probably testament to him as well, that some of those players have come out to be quite good managers too in the years later. But getting back to I suppose the 90s, and then so we have the St. Pat's winning the league, right? And then something interesting happens for 89-90 in the FAI Cup, right? So I suppose if we look at, first of all, St. Francis, because this is a bit of a crazy story. How did St. Francis find themselves in an FAI Cup final?
It was ridiculous. I mean, a non-league, it was a real fairy story. It was, I mean, and even Bray Wanderers being in the final was a bit of a fairy tale as well. You had St. Francis, I mean, Bray Wanderers were in the second tier. St. Francis were non-league, and they went on a run. But then in the semi-finals, you basically had Derry City and Bohemians, who were virtually nailed on to be meeting in the final. And they were both shocked. And I mean, St. Francis and Bray Wanderers got to the final. And in some ways, it was a funny one for the FAI, because it was on a Lansdowne Road, and people were thinking this is going to be a bit of a disaster crowd-wise. And the kickoff had to be delayed for half an hour. If I remember rightly, it was about half an hour of a delay, because the crowd was so big. And basically, the whole of the Liberties emptied. Because St. Francis, although they play out in Baldonnell, they're the team of the Liberties right in the heart of Dublin. And Bray Wanderers, even to their credit, drew a huge support as well, even though they wouldn't have got many of these people going week in, week out to the Carlisle grounds. But the whole of Bray turned out. They came in on the dart. The Liberties walked nearly. There was parades. to Lansdowne Road, and there were over 30,000 people in Lansdowne Road when the other cup finals of the time were attracting maybe 10 or 12,000 people. And it was a fantastic occasion. I remember it being a brilliant atmosphere. I remember being absolutely shocked at the crowd, and the Lansdowne Road being packed. It was more like an international day than a... Because in those days, the cup final, it had been moved... Let me remember, if I remember, 89 was actually played in Dalymount. So this was the first time it was moved to Lansdowne Road. So, but the cup finals in the 90s, I mean, even the likes of Bowes Cork, 92, 91 was Galway, of course. They were, Lansdowne Road was probably too big. You had maybe 10, 12,000 at the cup final. So this was a fantastic occasion. The game... Well, the hero of the hour, of course, was John Ryan, who got a hat-trick, the first man since Maya Dennehy. Bray won 3-0. They won rather easily. There was been no fairy tale for St. Francis. But what a day and what an occasion. And it had been, for many years, a modern-day cup final attendance record. We're probably used now to having 30,000, 40, 45,000 at cup finals. But back in 1990, it was a total... shock for the system, and far more than we were expecting.
Absolutely, yeah. I've got the attendances here in front of me, and that is by far the greatest attendance of the decade in the 90s. 29,000. Closest to it is probably, yeah, it's probably Bowes and Cork City, 17,000. So yeah, so it's a massive day. Just on that, in terms of FAI Cup Finals, I know now. You know, there's a huge amount of people that neutrals that will go to the FAI Cup final. Now, was that the same back then, or was it purely that was if your team was there, you went to support them? If they weren't, you didn't go.
I used to go as neutral, but
barring you, you're an exception to everything. Okay.
I certainly, I mean, these days, I think it's much, the cup final, as you say, is more of a day out for the neutrals. It wasn't so much the case back in those days. It was more or less the two teams. And depending on the teams, some of the clubs could maybe draw from a bigger support base if they got to a cup final than maybe some of the other clubs. They might have regular loyal fans who go week in, week out, but when it gets to cup final, maybe not the extra numbers. And I'm using examples like, I mean, even Shamrock Rovers, I think there are plenty of people who would show up for a cup final for Shamrock Rovers who may not go to Talla every week. Mm. Whereas club like St. Pat's, fantastic loyal supporters, but they wouldn't be able maybe to pull the extra 10, 15, 20,000 people who might consider themselves St. Pat's. I think most people that consider themselves St. Pat's fans actually do go and watch Pat's week in, week out as it is. I hope I'm not getting myself into trouble for this, but that's the way I see it.
Are you saying there's less bandwagon jumpers at St. Pat's? Is that what you're saying?
I think it is. I mean, I think both have got great supporters. But I think the likes of Shamrock Rovers could maybe pull in a 30, 40, 50,000 crowd. And maybe, I mean, even when Pat's got to that final with the record attendance against Bowes, I think there was a lot more Bowes fans there who don't get to see Bowes every week. So I think maybe the likes of Bowes, the likes of Rovers have maybe a latent support to support that don't go as often, but will turn out for the big occasion. I think particularly, I mean, in provincial clubs, I mean, the likes of Waterford, I think if Limerick got to the Aviva, Tralee got to the Aviva, we'd probably bring far, far more people than go to the Markets Field on a regular basis.
Yeah, so. but I think the difference is, though, with that kind of stuff is those are probably regional teams. You know, Waterford probably has a little bit more competition. It's got Cove to its left and Wexford to its right. But like in terms of something like Tralee, you have the whole Midwest region, and then you have Galway's got that whole kind of, you know, capture area, Sligo, do you know? So the team, a lot of the teams outside of Dublin kind of have a catchment region, whereas Dublin has this kind of internal kind of competition that always goes on because they're all in such close proximity to each other in a smaller, much smaller kind of area. Do you know what I mean? So there's probably greater amount to tap into in terms of the regional stuff to bring those kind of those kind of attendances to cup finals.
Yeah, I think that might be fair comment. But I mean, having said that, I mean, obviously I'm following Limerick a long, long time, over 50 years, and there are people that I haven't seen in the markets field for donkey's years are suddenly going off to support Munster Rugby or support the Limerick Hurlers that, to the best of my knowledge, hadn't been to a hurling match or a rugby, you know. And I mean, there is kind of a tradition of maybe hitching on to the success and the bandwagon, and you can use examples like that, you know. It's I think I go back to Limerick's league winning season of 79-80. We had 200 people at the opening match against UCD, and we had 5,000 packing in to play Dundalk by November. So from September to November, the crowds went from 200 to 5,000, because suddenly we're winning matches, we're top of the league. And even to this day, I think it's the crowds fluctuate a lot. And in fairness to clubs like Pat's, they don't lose the support, or they maybe don't have the crowd to get the real jump, but also they don't lose them if they're not that successful. So it's
so there you have it, folks. Limerick only likes winner. That's it. That's the only reason why they turn up to sporty occasions. Let's talk about 1990-91 season as well, because I suppose this is a team that we probably haven't given enough credit to and scope to it in the past kind of decades or so, but Dundalk win the league, and Dundalk were kind of in that period of probably a decade where they'd kind of pop up every once in a while, and they'd win a league title and kind of go back down to third and fourth or mid table, and then all of a sudden they'd come back and they'd, you know, 3 years later or something, they'd win another league title. Is there any specific reason for that? That they kind of seesawed around a bit much and never could, in that period, string two, three, maybe leagues together, which they probably could have?
They had won the double in 1988. So, I mean, they were still reasonably strong, but they didn't really compete for a little bit after that. Thurlough O'Connor was still there as manager. 1991 season, although Pats and Shells were third and fourth, they weren't really at the races. It was very much a two-horse race between Cork City and Dundalk. And if I remember it correctly, there was a huge game between the two at Turner's Cross that ended up being abandoned. And I think Thurlough O'Connor was in the referee's ear trying to get it abandoned. I can't remember, was it 0-0 or Cork winning 1-0? Anyway, Dundalk were quite happy. The pitch wasn't in great shape, but I think in those days, these days it definitely maybe wouldn't have started, but things were let slide, I think, a bit more in those days. But anyway, to be honest, I can't remember what Cork winning or Cork were drawing, but it was very controversial. The game was abandoned, and Cork City certainly didn't want it abandoned. And it came down to it that when the game was replayed, it was a title decider. Cork City and Dundalk and Turner's Cross to decide the title. And Tom McNulty got the only goal. Dundalk won 1-0. I let the Cork City and Dundalk fans argue who deserved the title. But I think generally, if you win a title, you do deserve it. And Dundalk managed to nick it by 2 points that season, and leaving Cork in second place. But it was a big title win for Dundalk. And as you said, they kind of pop up, win a title, win a double, disappear for a few years, and we'll talk about them in a few years
And they pop up again in the 90s and win another win another title. It's interesting that as well, because I suppose you could argue that the game being abandoned was and then it goes into that title decider. So you can kind of see that Cork City fans would still be miffed, considering they only lost the title by 2 points.
Yeah, they only lost 2 games all season, so that was only their second defeat of the season. Now, there was a few months between this, so just let me be clear. I think the abandoned game was back in January or February, and obviously it was the end of the season by well into April by the time the title decider was played. So there was a lot of football in between and everything. I'm sure there can be different games, points being dropped, points being won. But to go into the last game, having only lost once all season, to be top of the league at home and then not win it, it was a huge disappointment for Cork City.
Well, Dundalk had only lost 3 games too, so they were on it. And just looking at it here, it's Cork City have 4 more drawn games than Dundalk. So it's that thing again where it's kind of like, well, you know, you did lose it there, but you probably lost it in these kind of games that you probably should have won, all that kind of permutation stuff.
Oh yeah, look, I mean, you'd have to go back and go through the games, and I'm sure fans on both sides that lived that season, lucky goals, bad refereeing decisions, whatever, that could have gone the other way, except, I mean, I can go back on Limerick 79-80 league win. Obviously, we won it by a point, but there's so many games when it could have gone, it could have gone the other way. You know, it's when you win a league on the last day by a point or two, there's going to be a lot of what ifs. Obviously, if you win it, it's fantastic and you go and celebrate. If you lose it by a point, I mean, you're gutted, or 2 points in this case, but to your rivals for the title on the last day, it's
a heartbreaker.
It was a heartbreaker for Cork City because they hadn't won a league at that stage, and it was, well, I think it had been 74 since the title had last been on Lee side.
FAI Cup final, then we see Galway United, who had finished, I think, somewhere around 10th or something, or 8th or 9th, that season, taking the FAI Cup against Shamrock Rovers. Talk to us a little bit about that Galway United side, because they've kind of crept up in a couple of our conversations briefly, but they still cropped up in some of our conversation in recent podcasts.
You talk about your finest hour. There's no disputing this for Galway United fans. It was the finest hour. I mean, they got to the final in 85, and I think were reasonably well beaten by Shamrock Rovers. They did go on a long unbeaten run in 86 and pushed Rovers for the title. But I think most of us probably felt, even though we obviously would have wanted Galway to win the league, that Rovers were going to get there, get over the line in the end. And they did. But and Rovers would have been hot favourites for this FAI Cup final. Rovers had finished well down the table, a couple of places, maybe about 10, 15 points ahead of Galway. It was some achievement by Galway to get to the final. They weren't expected to win it. Rovers, Cup specialists, they win it so often, they'd won it so many times. And there was a feeling as well, Galway had never won anything. You know, they'd never won the FAI Cup. Okay, they did win the whatever about League Cups or whatever else. But of the two major trophies, this is the only one, their only win. And in 91, it came down to a late goal. Tommy Keane, I think, if I remember, went down the right-hand side and put it over. And Johnny Glynn, huge name in Galway football, still heavily, heavily involved. And he'll crop up in Cork City as well after this. But Johnny got the winner, and he's written into Galway folklore forever. They won the cup, and huge celebrations.
Yeah, and it's that kind of, what's the, do we talk to us a little bit about the team as well? Who makes up this Galway United side, and kind of where do they kind of make this success happen? Because they're in the Premier Division, but they're kind of at the time, they're kind of mid table-ish and kind of average, if we use that word.
Okay, so if you take the 91, again, there's some names I'll probably forget, but some of the big names are Jimmy Nolan at fullback, the likes of Derek Rogers and John Cleary were, I suppose, imports. Peter Carpenter, another very famous name in Galway football. Larry Wise, who'd had a lot of success with Athlone. He was on the team. I mentioned the likes of Tommy Keane setting up Johnny Glynn for the winner. You had local lads like Noel Myrna and Stephen Lally, Kevin Cassidy, and of course Eamon Deasy, the Mr. Galway football, sadly taken from us at a very young age. And I suppose the hero of the hour was Joey Malone, the player manager, who, well, he'll also go down in Galway folklore, but I think Johnny Glynn will be the one that's will be dining out that one forever.
Talk to us a little bit about, if you can, about Eamon Deasy, because his name is literally on the stadium and things like that as well. Why is he such a cult hero at Galway?
I suppose, first of all, he was a really lovely guy and an incredibly shy guy and a very unassuming. I mean, I think he started out originally with Sligo because Galway hadn't even joined the league. So he came to Limerick actually in the summer of 76. And as a young, I mean, what was he, about 18 at the time, fantastic player in the Limerick midfield that got to the FAI Cup final and lost to Dundalk. So he played in the Cup final, had the quality at that age. But when Galway Rovers, as they were then, came into the league in 1977, he was always going home. He was always going back to his hometown team. He was very much a Galway man and very much loved and a son of Galway. He starred for Galway, ended up getting a move to Aston Villa, and he was part of the Aston Villa side that won the league in season 80-81. And part of the Aston Villa squad. I think he played maybe 13 or 14 games. Can't remember exactly, but he was a key member of the squad because he could play anywhere. He'd slot in at full back. He was mainly a midfielder, but he could play in any position, really. He was one of these, look, he'll do a job for you. And I said he was never any trouble. If you ask Eamon to do something, he'll just go and do it quietly, unassumingly. He was so well regarded by his teammates, by managers like Ron Saunders and Tony Barton, who managed him at the time at Villa. He was capped for Ireland. He got a few caps for Ireland as well. Came back again to Galway and played for many, many years at Galway. And there's another thing about him because, and I know this from, and this probably isn't widely known, but when the chairman would be given out the wages in brown envelopes and he'd be giving it out every week, Eamon would, all the players were professional players, Eamon would just say, no, it's okay, and he'd hand it back. So he was effectively playing for nothing, playing for the love of the game. And look, he's adored in Galway. He's a legend. He's a hero there. And said, sadly taken far, far too soon.
Yeah, he sounds like a really just a genuinely great guy.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I mean, it's you won't hear a bad word said about him anywhere, you know. And I mean, he was much loved in Limerick and very highly regarded. But we understood in the summer of 77 with Galway coming into the league that he had to go back, and he was a big loss. We're sorry to see him go.
Yeah, sounds like a fantastic guy, but forever etched in the history of Galway as well. And of course, they have a stadium named after him as well. So I think that's all the love you need to know about as well.
And just to say for his funeral as well, I mean, I mean it was 13, 14 years ago now. I can't remember the year exactly. But so many of that Aston Villa squad, in fairness to the Aston Villa, fantastic club, they pulled out all the stops too. But so many of them travelled to Galway to pay the final respects to Eamon as well.
Mm, absolutely, yeah. Testament to the man.
Absolutely.
Galway win the FAI Cup, and then next season, then it's Shelburne. And I talked to I talked to Pat Byrne, who was the manager then, and he took probably by his own admission one of his finest achievements as a manager, which was taking his, I suppose, his childhood loves in Shelburne to a long awaited title as well. It's one of those stories that we kind of talked about a couple of minutes ago, where a manager comes in and he changed the trajectory of a team, even if it's just for, you know, that single kind of title winning season. And he certainly did that at Shelburne.
Yeah, because they hadn't really contended in quite a while. This was their first title win since the 1960s. And they hadn't really contended. They didn't really contend. Well, we can go on and talk about the seasons after that. But this one, and they won it with some points to spare. They won it by 5 points in the end. If I remember, maybe a couple of draws with Bowes or something, but they got over the line comfortably enough. And it certainly wasn't a nail-biting title race anyway. Not that we'd want to talk about the next one. But,
yeah, and again, it's interesting that Derry City side that we saw kind of win the treble in 89 is still, it's still there. It's still kind of, I suppose, inches away from winning leagues as well, because they're, you know, they're in second or they're in third, etc. And they're still kind of hanging around that kind of top end of the table, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, Derry were there for much of the 90s. They were, if they weren't winning the league, they were certainly challenging for it, or they were in second or third place. They were qualifying for Europe consistently as well. And but I think certainly 1992, the league was Pat Byrne's year and Shelburne's year.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I wanted to talk to you as well about the following year as well. In 93, Cork City win the league. Probably they were kind of in and around the winning the leagues. Where does this Cork City side come from to win this league in 93?
Yeah, so I mean, you might have to go back a couple of years, because they had lost the cup final to Derry in 1989, but even though they took it to a replay and Dave Barry nearly won it for them, Derry were expected to win that cup. So that was kind of out of the blue. But after that, Cork contended. We obviously talked about 91. Then in 92, they got to the cup final against Bohemians. And they were favourites to win it. And they probably, well, I got to get myself into trouble as well again. But I was at the match. My memory of the game is Cork probably should have won it, didn't take their chances. And Dave Tilson, who's obviously a hero, maybe started out at UCD, but's going to be a Bowes legend for that day, he got the only goal with maybe 10 or 11 minutes to go and won it for Bohemians. So again, it was a case of Cork City finishing 1992 as the bridesmaids. And it came on to 92-93, and maybe the craziest League of Ireland finish in season.
Talk to us about the end of the season, because looking at the final tables, the final table is bonkers. so there's 3 points separating the top five.
Yeah, and it had gone right down to the wire. So just to explain as well, the league had been splitting at that stage into the top six and bottom six. So Cork actually had been leading the table. And I know this again, I'll have to drag Limerick into this, but Cork were top of the table, and Limerick were in a battle with St. Pat's for the last spot in the top six. And we were due to play Cork City in Bishopstown on a Sunday afternoon, and Pat's were playing Shelburne in Dublin. We had to better Pat's result to get into the top six. So, yeah, I think actually, sorry, we got in goal difference. Pats were a point ahead. And the Limerick, the Corks, I was already down in Cork and the game was called off. So, but St. Pat's Shelburne went ahead, which finished as a draw. So that put Pats 2 points ahead of Limerick. And Limerick had a back match, which had to be played midweek. And because of the state of the Bishopstown pitch, it was moved to Turner's Cross, which was obviously great news for Cork City fans, because frankly, most of them hated Bishopstown. They were never happy out there. And that's that's not a controversial thing to say. I've yet to meet a Cork City fan that wasn't pining for Turner's Cross when they were out in Bishopstown. And but anyway, the game was played in Turner's Cross, and Howie King nicked a goal in the second half for Limerick to snatch the top six spot. Limerick just sneaked into the top six, and frankly, I don't think we won a match in the top six. But the other five were certainly incredibly competitive. But it got to the end of the season, and Shells and Bows were a couple of points clear. Derry were a point further back. Cork were another point back with a couple of games to go, and it looked like the title was between Shells and Bows. A very probably forgotten about crucial late goal by John Caulfield. Last gasp gave them a win over Derry. And Bows actually got a couple of late goals to win in Limerick. But Shelburne had dropped points. And so it was all down to the Bows last day. I think they just needed a draw to win the title. And they were away to Dundalk, who were out of contention at that stage. And actually, we were back in Bishopstown the same day. Because that was the last day of the season, but it was a nothing game for Limerick. But it looked like it was a nothing game for Cork. I can't actually remember. I think Shells must have been playing Derry. But Bows had to go to Oriel Park and get a draw, and the bus breaks down. So kickoff is delayed, and again, people can keep me honest on this. I am going on my memory, okay? Because I was in Bishopstown, but it was 32 years ago. Certainly the Bows bus broke down. They were stranded. They got a mechanic out. He couldn't fix it. They had to get a replacement bus. And the game started about 45 minutes to an hour late in Oriel Park. My memory is that the Cork City Limerick game still went off as planned. I don't remember. And the Shelburne game went off as planned. So that's certainly my memory. But Cork City beat us comfortably enough 3-0. Shelburne also won. And that man, I think Tom McNulty again, he won a league for Dundalk, but he also cost Bows a league title. He got a goal in the second half. And my memory is of, we were already heading back to Limerick, or I was living in Galway at the time. And when I got that over the radio, I may be misremembering that, because we certainly would have stayed till the bitter end in Bishopstown, even though we were getting stuffed. But so what that meant was the three teams were left level on top, because goal difference wasn't used in those days to decide the title. So it could decide something like relegation, the European places, but you had to have a playoff for the title. So in this case, you had to have a three-way playoff between Cork, Bows and Shells. And they decided to have a home and away playoff. So that meant another four games each. And guess what? Again, there's no goal difference. They all win a game, they all draw two games, and they all lose a game. So you had to have another playoff. And this time... The never-ending season. And if I remember this, they changed the rules. And I think there were games played in the RDS and in Cork. But anyway, this time Cork City won both. They beat Bows and they beat Shelburne to win the title. And finally get over the line and win a league in kind of a bonkers, I suppose, season.
Absolutely crazy. I've never heard anything like it.
So, a crazy way to decide the league. And I mean, it obviously went on for weeks after the players were, I mean, the players would have had six more games at the end of the league season, which would have been a very long season in those days as well. So, I mean, I can't remember the dates, but certainly in the summer of 1993, they were still playing football well after they would have expected to be finished.
Oh, wow. That is...
And to complicate matters, Shelburne were also in the cup final, so that did delay matters as well.
So did Shelburne actually play the cup final before the league season was finished?
So the cup final would have been after the league season was finished, but if I remember, it was before the playoffs. I can't recall the exact sequence, but that would have delayed, or maybe there was playoffs in midweek before the cup final. I don't think so. I think it didn't start till after the cup final. So that's my recollection now.
Who knows, Gary? It's a maddening season. My brain is already trying to work out equations that I can't figure out.
Yeah, and Chels, they didn't give Dundalk any thanks for beating Bowes. They still beat them in the cup finals. So at least they had the consolation of winning the cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it kind of goes back to that thing that we see often, which is the runner-up kind of disappointed at not winning the league ends up getting the cup at the end of it as well, you know.
Yeah, so that would have been some consolation. Obviously, Shells had won the league the year before and still need to win the cup. The ultimate disappointment, of course, was for Bohemians, who had the league in their hands. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I mean, you have to say the bus breaking down had to impact on preparation, everything. I mean, I'm sure if you ask any Bowes fan, if the bus hadn't broken down, they'll say they'd have got the point in Oriel Park and won the league.
Broken down or
we'll never know.
Broken down or sabotaged. I'm just saying,
you're definitely starting conspiracy theories now.
I'm adding fuel to this absolutely insane season is what I'm doing.
No, I certainly don't recall anyone claiming it was sabotage. Who knows, you know?
Well, if that was a bonkers season, I suppose the next season was perhaps the season of teams coming from nowhere to win major trophies. Shamrock Rovers win the title in 93-94 out of, is it fair to say, absolutely nowhere?
Yeah, I think that is definitely fair to say. I don't think anybody would have tipped. They moved to the RDS. They hadn't been in contention. They'd been in the bottom six. They hadn't even challenged for the top six the previous season. I don't think anyone would have expected them to win the title. And they won it by a mile. I mean, they won it by about 9 points. They won it comfortably.
Wow.
Cork City, Shelburne were, what, 9 and 11 points behind, respectively. And it was out of nowhere. And they won it by playing good football. I mean, Ray Tracy is manager. He's still at the likes of Peter Eccles, still doing it at the back. He'd been around, obviously, in the Jim McLaughlin era. And it's Stephen Gagan banging in the goals up front. So I think that's that was it. They did beat Cork, if I remember rightly. They were about 5 or 6 points clear, maybe 3 or 4 games to go. And Cork City came to the RDS. And there was a bit of a needle between the two clubs. But Rovers won the game comfortably enough by 2-0. But Ray Tracy, now in fairness, the style of football in the League of Ireland in those days, there was a lot more long ball, a lot more kick and rush. But Ray Tracy was very dismissive of the way Cork City played football. And he was on about the long ball game and all this. And his own team played a different style. And certainly they did play a passing game. I think that would be fair to say of that Shamrock Rovers side. And maybe it's the tradition of everything of Shamrock Rovers that they do play good football. I certainly don't remember Shamrock Rovers as ever being a long ball team. But there was a bit of a row between Shamrock Rovers and Cork City that day. That win effectively put them 7 or 8 points clear. They won it by 9, but it was a comfortable title win for Rovers.
Yeah, and yeah. Like we often say on this podcast, they appeared out of nowhere and disappeared just as quickly. That was their moment in the sun for about what, another, you know, 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they weren't to win another one for about 15 years after that, you know.
But we've talked so much as well on this podcast about Sligo Rovers and their cup heartaches and getting dodgy decisions against them and blah 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 blah. But here they are winning a cup again, which is I think is great, because I feel for Shamrock, or sorry, I feel for Sligo Rovers after all we've talked about them.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it's a real fairy story, because they were down in the second tier. And I mean, there's another Limerick involvement as well, because I can talk about the semi-final, because if my memory serves me correctly, Limerick, and this may not add up with the way the fixtures, but we were away in Monaghan. Limerick were relegated in Monaghan. Monaghan beat us 2-1 with a couple of late goals, and we were actually relegated that day. I think that was the same day that Rovers beat Cork, but they've still had a couple of games to play. And I think that was the end of our season, because we had the semi-final to come. So Limerick were relegated. Sligo Rovers were top of the first division. They'd already won the first division, if I remember correctly. And I think they'd won a League of Ireland Shield or some other competition as well, because they were on course for a treble. And they were actually favourites for the semi-final against Limerick. They were drawn at home, so it was a one-off semi-final in the showgrounds on a Saturday night. And if I remember correctly, I was somewhere north of Tuam when the game was called off. So I had to turn around and head back, but it was fixed for the following Tuesday night. And it's certainly one that struck in my head. And you talk about the great cup tradition in Sligo Rovers, because sellouts these days are common enough in the League of Ireland, and you're used to buying your tickets in advance. We never bought a ticket in advance in those days. I mean, there might have been tickets on sale, but you pay at the gate, you pay in. I got up to Sligo on I think it was played on a Tuesday night. And if I remember correctly, Man United were in a cup semi-final replay on TV, and I thought it might have affected the crowd. So you get to Sligo about two or I mean, I did arrive early and was told sold out. And don't be ridiculous. And it actually was, I think, an 8,000 or 10,000 sellout. Now, they had held tickets back. We didn't actually have that many fans, from what I can remember on the Tuesday night, but they had held tickets back, and there was no Limerick fan locked out. But they did lock out their own fans. And I don't remember too many Limerick fans being in the ground. And they beat us 1-0. Like, a late enough goal from what I can remember. I think it was a one, or maybe we had some chances late on. Eddie and Ann, I think, got the goal, but they were deserving winners. It was the better team won. But Derry City would have been hot favourites for the FAI Cup final. Sligo, even though Cos coming up in the first division, they weren't given much of a chance. Willie McStay, by the way, was the manager. Well, he's well known in Scottish football, played with Celtic, and I think he's still a scout for Celtic, actually, who's certainly involved in Scottish football heavily. The brother of Paul McStay, who was a gifted midfield player for Celtic and Scotland at the time. But Willie was the manager, got them to the cup final, and they won a game in the port, if I remember rightly, they won it. I could be getting this wrong as well, sorry. In 1983, they definitely won it in the pouring rain. I have a feeling it was pouring rain in 1994 as well, and I could be wrong on that one. But Jerry Carr got the only goal, and a late enough goal, maybe 10, 12 minutes from the end, and they beat Derry City 1-0.
Yeah, and the lads from the West that that enjoy the rainy days. We're used to it over here.
Yeah, absolutely. If someone can correct me in the comments if I'm mixing up the weather,
but it's
they certainly won it 1-0. Yeah,
definitely, and it's great to see them doing it. And I always have this kind of, because we've talked about them so much and etc. And I know you talk about Sligo quite fondly as well as a club. It's always great to when they pop up and you see them winning a title or a cup or something from nowhere, because it's a hugely proud club, and because of those kind of, you know, those rare cup wins, you know, those hen's teeth, they love them all the more.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's a real football town. I mean, and it's when they say football, it's Rovers. I mean, it's not Man United. I'm pretty sure Man United were on TV that night. That might have made a difference in Limerick. It might have made a difference in Dublin. It didn't make a difference in Sligo. They the showgrounds was absolutely mobbed. And I mean, the health and safety regulations were different in those days as well. But in fact, that's why he was actually surprised people were turned away. But the game was definitely sold out, and it actually sold out. It sold out that afternoon, but they had, as I said, they'd held tickets back for Limerick people travelling up.
Yeah, and I know we talked about it on our last podcast. You mentioned it as well when at Euro 88 and the way people got tickets, they just rocked up to the stadium and they got like their tickets for a couple of quid. Whereas now, you know, it's all like, well, you know, have your ticket printed before you get here, and you know, that'll be €85, please, if you want to come into an international finals game as well.
Now, you need to remember as well, there was no internet, there were no mobile phones. So if you wanted to, I mean, Limerick used to put tickets on sale in advance, maybe in Limerick Sports Store or Tony Ward Sports Shop, but very few people would buy in advance. Most people would rock up on the day and pay in on the gate. That's the way it worked. Same in Limerick, same everywhere else. And even right into the 90s.
Even for very big games?
Even for very big games. I mean, for the FAI, and I mean, I spoke in the previous podcast about getting a real shock with the Belgium 87 game being sold out. And that I needed that, and I'm actually really glad it happened, because I always book my tickets after that. I said, I'll just buy the ticket because I know I'm going. But for the League of Ireland, I wouldn't have been doing that. That was for the national team, and the FAI would have had them on sale from Merrion Square. They'd have had them in Elvries. They had them. You could buy them from a few different places. But for Limerick, I would never buy in advance for the Marketsfield, no matter how big the game was. I would always rock up. Now, I would come early. People that know me would know I'm a terror for going early to games. So I wouldn't be coming up with 5 minutes to kick off. But I would not be buying the ticket in advance. I'd just show up at the turnstiles reasonably close to when the gates open and pay in at that point. And, I mean, it's only very, very recently with the likes of games, tickets going online, games selling out, that you need to be even tuned in. Okay, some of the years I would have had season tickets as well for Limerick, but once we got into the 80s and I was in college, I wouldn't have gotten to every game, so I was missing quite a few more home games, and I wouldn't necessarily have a season ticket then. I'd pay in on a weekly basis.
Very different. And we go to 94, 95 now, and our old friends Dundalk make their appearance after four seasons, and they win the league title again. Was there anything different about this time round as opposed to 91?
Oh, this was bonkers! Another bonkers end to the season. I mean,
the 90s apparently was the decade for bonkers finishes.
Well, it was. I mean, well, Derry had won the league. They just had to show up in Athlone against an Athlone team that were heading for relegation and had nothing to play for. They just needed to win. And if by any chance they didn't win, the title would have gone to Shelburne, who I think they were playing St. Pat's, actually. I can't recall exactly who Shelburne were playing. And if by any chance Shelburne messed it up, which wasn't going to happen then, Dundalk could have won the title by beating Galway. But I don't think anyone in Dundalk expected them to be in the title race. And I remember, because it was actually, again, I'm dragging this back to Limerick, but we were in Rathbann needing to beat Finn Harps to get into a promotion playoff. And it was one of those crazy games when we battered them 0-0 and just could not score. And it finished 0-0. Harps got the playoff actually against Athlone, and we ended up spending another God only knows how many years, 16, 17 years in the first division. And as somebody very unkindly reminded me a few years ago, I did comment walking out of Rathbann that that maybe it's a good thing that we spend another season in the first division because we'd be a lot better than we go up. Yes, I have to own that one.
Yeah.
But what I remember in Ratban that day was the absolute bonkers news coming through on the radio that Derry City just needed to beat Athlone. They did make hard work of it. It was 1-1. They get a penalty in the second half. And Stuart Gauld, who was Mr. Reliable, I think he'd scored 37 out of 38 penalties. He never missed. And Shane Curran made a fantastic save to tip the penalty around the post. And even still, there was still 15, maybe half an hour to go. And Derry just battered the Athlone goal and just could not score. It was one of those days. It finished 1-1. Shelburne then had the chance to win the title. They knew what was happening in Athlone. I think they went a goal down and they equalised, but they drew 1-1. And that meant that Dundalk had to beat Galway. And Dundalk were, I think they had a routine 2 or 3 nil win over Galway to somehow finish the day as champions. When I think anyone that morning even or earlier in the season expected them to win it. So a bit of a bonkers end to the season and a title out of nowhere for Dundalk.
That's fascinating. So they start the day as probably what, third favourites? And people are like, surely it's gotta be Derry City. So one of them will be champions. And then it all just falls apart for both of them.
It falls apart. I mean, I think everyone expected Derry to win comfortably in Athlone. I mean, there was a decent gap between top and bottom in those days. And I don't know. I mean, Shane Curran had the game of his life in goal, saved the Stuart Gauld penalty. And I mean, but it, definitely for any Derry City fan, it's one that got away that it must really stick in the craw.
Mm. I see top goal scorer that season was John Caulfield, who'd be familiar to League of Ireland followers now as well.
No, I mean, in those days, John Caulfield and Pat Morley, I think they finished, they're still the joint leading goal scorers for Cork City. They were banging in the goals for years. And I mean, the two of them were such a huge part of the success that Cork City had. A double act up front, and they scored so many goals.
Wow, incredible. Did not know that. It's interesting. So a bonkers end to the season sees Dundalk from nowhere becoming champions. FAI Cup final then is between Derry City and Shelburne. How does that one turn out?
Well, it's not one of much of a memory of. I actually don't think I was at that game for some reason. But Derry City beat Shelburne 2-1.
Gary Spain, so not at an FA Cup final, FAI Cup final. What is going on? What happened? Were you sick?
To be honest, I can't remember. And I had moved to Dublin the year earlier, so it would have been even easier for me to be at it. But if I was there, I've no memory of being there. I cannot remember. But Derry won the Cup 2-1. It was some consolation having blown the league. What was it, a week earlier? And obviously for Shells, it was double disappointment having blown the league and then losing the cup as well. It was played out in front of about 15,000 again in probably would have felt a very small crowd. I mean, my memory of the cup final, certainly the following year, even with Shelburne and Pats, that there were 10, maybe, I think the replay was in Dalymount, but the first day in Lansdowne Road, there would have been fairly small crowds and not a great atmosphere.
The next season then we see St. Pat's as champions. It would be the second of their league titles of four in the decade. Is there a big difference between the team from 1990 and the team from, we'll say, 96, 98, and 99? Is there big differences, or is it kind of like, you know, these players that come in and out and et cetera, or was there new faces?
I mean, there's some new faces over the decade, but and Pat Brian Kerr handed the baton on to Pat Dolan, etc. Mm. The big game in 96, Pats were in a battle with Bowes for the title.
That's right, yeah.
And they went to Dalymount with a couple of games to go, and it was a dreadful nil-all draw on a dreadful pitch. I should point out the surface in Daly Mount. I mean, you talk about them, some great pitches in the League of Ireland, the likes of Milltown and Flower Lodge, both sadly lost. But I mean, Daly Mount Park, the surface was normally pretty awful, and it was really bad at that stage. But on a bad day, on a bad pitch, and Brian Kerr said Pats played really badly, but a sign of champions, you eke out the result. Mm. And they drew nil-nil with Bowes, and that kept the gap. That was enough to win the title in 96. But
talk to me a little bit about, you mentioned Pat Dolan there, who's got to be one of the League of Ireland's great characters of the game as well, and particularly in this period too. Talk to us a little bit about him. Who was he, and kind of where did he come from?
His links with Galway. I mean, he himself and his twin brother Eamon played underage for Ireland. Pat was a centre half. Had links in Galway. Very much what I will say about Pat was a huge fan and promoter of the League of Ireland, even to the stage, I recall. I mean, Pat O'Callaghan, legend of St. Pat's, runs the programme shop, or used to run, sells programmes in Richmond Park. I mean, Pat's in his 80s now, and Mr. St. Pat's all his life. Pat Dolan's tried to stop him selling English programmes out of the shop in the 90s because he didn't want to see any English shirts. All he didn't want to see Man United or Liverpool. All he wanted was St. Pat's. And but a huge fan of the game, very big, even back in the 90s, in promoting the league. I can tell another story, actually, that involves me and Pat Dolan back in those days. And it actually was in 98, Shelburne, nothing to do with Pat Dolan. Shelburne drew Rangers in Europe. And there was concerns over trouble. I'd bought two tickets for the game. The game was meant to be in Talca Park. I think it had been moved to even 12 o'clock. And it got switched to Tranmere. Now, in fairness to Shells, anyone who had bought a ticket was given a deal. They could pay £10 more. And they'd be brought by bus and boat to Tranmere. But that was, I was going as a neutral, and I was actually incredibly busy in work at the time. And I could have maybe made it to Talca Park, but there was no way I could have made it to Tranmere. So I was probably I think the ticket sales were actually pretty bad as well, because of concerns over trouble. But to cut a long story short, I was looking for my refund from Shelburne. And as was common enough, I suppose, in the League of Ireland, and I don't want to cast aspersions on Ollie Byrne or anything, but it took me a while to get my money back. And I think I bought the tickets with Visa, and I'd eventually to go through Visa maybe 3 or 4 months afterwards. So, but I got my money back. And a few months after that, so this was well into 1999, a friend of mine was having dinner with a few other people with Pat Dolan. And Pat Dolan wouldn't have known me from Adam. And Michael was telling Pat the story. Now, Pat had nothing to do with Shelburne, and this was nothing to do with him. And he said, "That's disgraceful." He says, "No League of Ireland fan should be treated like that. I don't want, and Mike, don't worry about him. It's not going to stop him going. Well, that could put someone off going." And I said, "No, don't worry about Gary. He's fine. He's not going to, he won't be put off." Well, he says, "I want you give me his number now. You ring him up." And I got called sitting at home from the dinner. And Pat Dolan wants you to be his guest in Richmond Park. And they were actually, they were playing Cork City in a title decider. So I was his guest. I was given two free tickets for the St. Pat's Cork City game because of the way another League of Ireland club had treated me. And he said, "I don't want anyone to," and that was the way he was. He didn't want anyone to have a bad experience in the league. And he was, well, a very much a larger than life figure. And I know he still has his newspaper column and everything as well. But and I know he's controversial in many quarters, and I know, but I mean, but to me, he's certainly was very much a positive image and a very positive person. And somebody, I think in the 1990s and the 2000s, the League of Ireland needed, because I think I can look back now when I see how successful and how vibrant the league is in Dublin. It wasn't like that in the 1990s. You know, it really was different. So the likes of Pat Dolan was certainly a very positive voice for the league in the 90s.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And even I was a young lad growing up in the 90s as well. You often see Pat Dolan on the television, and he always had something to say. But to his credit, it was usually to try and make the league better, etc. When he did. You mentioned Ollie Byrne there as well, who's another top character of the
absolutely,
League of Ireland.
Yeah.
And I talked to Pat Byrne about him as well, who obviously would have worked under him and stuff like that, and controversially got sacked by him as well at a training session. But he kind of said as well that he said Ollie was just, you know, he was just one of those great characters that comes along in football, one of those chairmen that just he wheeled and he dealed because he just wanted the club to be better.
Yeah, I mean, I go back to those tickets. I mean, it wasn't that Shelburne were being bad. It was just Shelburne were chaotic. Ollie was chaos. And Ollie was a fantastic guy. He was Mr. Shelburne. He was, he did everything for that club. And I mean, I at a huge personal cost. And I mean, again, someone who was taken too young and too soon. And I think the stress and everything and the chaos that was Shelburne at the time. But, I mean, what he did for the club and what days they had, what fantastic days Shelburne had in the 90s on into the noughties as well. Mm. And so much of it was down to Ollie Byrne. And, I mean, I know he rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way at a lot of clubs, but I think he was, he was a really likeable guy. And he did everything for Shelburne. He was Mr. Shelburne. And I know he's still loved by their fans and that club. And so he should be.
Yeah. Pat told me a great story where he would basically turn around to lads and go, listen, I'll give you 50, 60 tickets if you give us, you know, 10 paint pots to paint up the dressing room or something like that. And so he was a real character. In that way as well. I suppose while we're there too, and we will talk about Derry City in 96-97, but say Pat's win in 96-98 and 99, it's really their kind of decade, really, isn't it? That kind of, is it fair to say, solidifies St. Pat's as a team that's kind of probably been overshadowed by their Dublin neighbours for quite a while?
Yeah, no, I have to say about 90. Pat's winning at 98. This is another one with lots of last day drama, because Pat's won that from nowhere. Shells were, and I mean, I know there's a bitter rivalry between Pat's and Shells, and there's a lot of stuff that you don't even want to get into. But I mean, some of the rivalry went down that season because Shells effectively blew the league. We're going back to our old favourite place, Oriel Park. And Bohemians and buses, but there was no bus issues here. But Shells, they were in control of the league. They were expected to, I think they only needed a draw in Dundalk, and they were beaten. And St. Pat's were down in Kilkenny, and even still, St. Pat's were making hard work of beating Kilkenny City, which they needed to do then to win the league. And Eddie Gormley got a late, maybe 10, 11 minutes to go. Got a late goal to win the league. And I know from talking to Pat's fans that were in Kilkenny, many of them say that was their greatest day. Now, maybe some will say winning the cup after that, but certainly that league title, winning it in Kilkenny against the odds and particularly beating Shelburne to it, that was a special day for Pat's fans. So that league in 98, as you said, they won it in 96, they'd won it in 1990, but that was a big win. And as you said, then 99, it was Pats and Cork, nip and tuck. I think Pats and Shells had been so far in 98, they'd been well clear. I think it was a good 10, 15 points between Shells and Cork City in third place. But there was a two-horse race for so long. Again, there must have been 20, 30 points between Pats and Cork City and Shells. in third place in 99. Again, it was very much a two-horse race. And it was that night in Chicor when they beat Cork that effectively decided the title. And as I said, I was there. I can't even. I might have missed the Limerick match for that. But I.
Oh my kinda, lord! New crazy stories about Gary Spain.
I can't remember if we were playing that night, but I couldn't turn. I mean, Pat Dolan more or less summoned me to be my friend to Richmond Park, and I couldn't. I would have to check. I don't remember checking the results, so I would have to check if we were actually playing that night. But certainly the night Pats beat Cork, I think it was 2-0 to win the league, I was sitting as a guest in the main stand in Richmond Park, free of charge as a guest of Pat Dolan. So,
champagne and prawn sandwiches, was it?
Well, it's they don't do prawn sandwiches in Richmond. a great ground, great atmosphere, and a fantastic club there in Pat. Absolutely brilliant, well-run club.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and those cup finals then as well that were kind of along those lines to Shelburne get the revenge on St. Pat's in the middle of the decade as well with a replay at Dalymount Park. That must have been two epic games between two people that just loathe each other.
Yes, I remember the first game in Lansdowne Road, and of course Pats hadn't won the cup since 1961. They won the cup in 59, they won it in 61. I think they became the first Irish club to enter the Cup Winners' Cup, pretty sure on that. And then they had so many hard luck stories in cup finals and lost to that Rovers 6-in-a-row team, lost to Finn Harps, they lost to Waterford. So I know Limerick beat them in the 71 semi-final as well. So there was a lot of hard luck stories in the cup, and this was another one. They drew in Lansdowne Road, and they lost the replay in Dalymount Park, Shelburne, which I think was on a Friday night, if I remember correctly. And again, that was another one I'm pretty sure I paid in to stand on the terraces in Dalymount, and I would have paid in Lansdowne Road on the day as well. You know, I mean, Lansdowne Road held 50,000. Mm. But even the replay in Dalymount, my memory is going along on the night and just paying in and standing on the old reserve terrace.
Losing a cup final is always worse when it's the absolute... The one team that you don't want to lose against is the one that beats you.
Yeah, I mean, because there's still a rivalry to this day, but certainly that was bubbling up very much in the 90s between Pats and Shells for all sorts of reasons, as I said. You know.
And Shells do the double then as well. They beat Derry City in 96-97 season for doing the double. Sorry, not doing the double, but winning it twice in a row as well. So it's really it's interesting. So this is a very much an opinion question, your opinion on this, okay? So we're seeing a decade where there's so many close finishes, like ridiculously close finishes. Is it because the teams are so competitive, or because there's teams that just aren't seeing it through to the end? It seems to be like a lot of them are caused by teams that clearly are the front runners, and then they botch it within the last two games and somebody comes in to take their place. So it's a really weird kind of decade where that happens, what, 3-4 times?
Yeah, I mean, an Oriel Park, I suppose, comes up a lot in it. But it was very competitive. I mean, that Dundalk, it was Dermot Keely's Dundalk that won it in 95, would have been fairly low-budget side that would have come. So there wasn't a lot of money flying around the league in those days. So maybe it was a little even or something like that. But, yeah, there were a few teams that blew it, I suppose, on the last day, or... You can have bad luck with a bus breaking down. You can have a goalkeeper, Shane Curran, of the game of his life. I mean, it's...
Sabotage bus, I think that was what you were trying to say, was it?
I'm
joking, by the way. I've completely made that up. I have nothing to substantiate that accusation.
And there is nothing. It was just, I mean, the bus did just break down, and then they couldn't get it fixed, and then it took ages to get a replacement, and it was just absolute chaos. But you had things like, oh, I don't know, in 98, Shelburne losing the league on the last day, then they lose the cup final after that. It's the sure disappointments of, I mean, all the clubs will have hard luck stories from that time, you know, what might have been. I mean, I talked about the Cork City ones, the Shelburne ones, the Bows. I mean, Bows still talk about Oriel Park and the bus breaking down, you know. how many years ago is that now? Mm. And it's still, it hurts. Of course it hurts. I mean, you're going through a whole league, particularly the league campaign when it's over 30 matches or whatever, 30, whoever games were played in those days. And it all comes down to the final day, and you have it in your own hands, and something goes wrong, something out of your control. And in some ways, we can look at it as a neutral and say it was bonkers, and it probably was a bit bonkers, but it would really hurt the clubs and potentially hurt them financially as well.
Yeah. And two lads in a history podcast 30 years later would have nothing to talk about if it wasn't a bit bonkers. I wanted to wrap up as well just by asking, we have St. Pat's who win four titles within the decade, 90, 96, 98, and 99. Where do we put St. Pat's then on a level of, you know, obviously we had that great Shamrock Rovers team as the decade before, but where are we talking about with St. Pat's and this kind of level of winning the league, you know, in that period?
I wouldn't, again, you're getting into controversy, but I wouldn't put them at the level of the Jim McLaughlin, Dermot Keeney.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that there's the, you know, they win it four times in a decade. Rubbish teams don't win leagues four times in a decade. Where are we putting them in terms of, like, I suppose, the pantheon of other great teams like the Waterfords and the et cetera that have done it before?
I suppose they did win four in the decade, but maybe three of them were towards the end of the decade as well. And there would have been significant changes from Brian Kerr in 90, Pat Dolan in 99. But they were without doubt the team of the decade. And I mean, Pats have had, they won leagues, they won three in the 50s in a 4 or 5 year period as well. So it wouldn't even have been the, you can argue, was it the greatest Pats team of all time? And I think I'd leave that one for the Pats historians. But certainly the team that won it in 96, 98, and 99 were certainly very dominant, even if Shelburne will bitterly complain. Well, it's their own fault and in their own hands, but they lost. They just didn't show up in Oriel Park, and they lost on the day, and Pats nicked the league down in Kilkenny.
Yeah, and whatever is said about it, they do end the decade with three out of the last four titles as well.
Yeah, I should actually mention we did say Derry won the league comfortably in 97, but I should mention Bray Wanderers again, because they bookended the 90s. With FAI Cup successes.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Both of which came from absolutely nowhere. And the 1999 final, I mean, Finn Harps would have been hot favourites to win it. And in those days, there wasn't penalty shootouts, so it actually went to three games. And my memory is Finn Harps were the better team, should have won it, didn't win it, and Bray Wanderers got there in the end and nicked the cup. And Finn Harps are still waiting back to 1974 for one of the we talked about Galway's finest hour being in 91. Again, Finn Harps, we said it already, their 74 cup win remains the only time that they've won either of the two major national trophies.
Mm. And it's so weird to have, I mean, quite often, and people would have heard it through the podcast, you get this kind of one team that pops up somewhere, they win the cup and they completely disappear again. We never see them again. But Bray managed to do the same thing twice in a decade, which is it's just quite extraordinary.
Yeah, and I mean, they were relegated. They were well off the pace in the Premier Division. So they were relegated in 1999. Finn Harps had finished fourth. Finn Harps were actually a really good side at the time. And they were expected to win it comfortably. And, oh, for whatever reason, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely one in Donegal that won't be remembered fondly. But Bray beat them in a second replay after three matches, you know.
Yeah. But it's still, like, it's still the Cup, though, isn't it? I mean, the Cup, even now, I would argue that the Cup still has a magic about it that you can't really get away from as well. I mean, I know we don't probably see so many extraordinary teams coming through, etc., to win it. But, you know, you still see Cup upsets. You still see big surprises.
You do, and you can even say, I suppose, Drogheda, the current holders, were in a relegation playoff, They won the Cup. But quite a lot of people did tip them to beat Derry City in last year's Cup final. So that's maybe a different matter. But I don't recall
Derry being Derry.
Yeah, I don't recall too many people. It's 26 years ago now, but I don't recall too many people tipping Bray Wanderers. Certainly not too many outside of Bray. But an incredible achievement, and I don't want to take anything away from Bray. I mean, they've had, as I said, they bookended the 90s. They won the Cup in 1990, and they won it in 1999, an incredible achievement.
Absolutely fantastic, Gary. Always fascinating, always interesting. And it's only going to get more interesting because I'm absolutely really, really interested to find out what's going on that puts two teams completely at odds with each other, going at different ends of winning league titles. So I'm sure that's going to be absolutely fascinating to talk about and to look at as well. But until next time, Gary, awesome again. Talk to you soon.
Cheers. Thanks, Kim.
Well, that's it for this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football. On the next show with Gary, we'll be talking about the highest point in Irish international football for the Republic of Ireland as we go to Italia 90 and our incredible adventure in that World Cup. Remember to share the show on your own social media channels to spread the word about the history and heritage of Irish football on the island. And support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League clubs. It's our history, it's our game. Until next time, bye for now.